technology.
Well, I was going to thank the organizer for organizing such a great meeting and also a workshop, but since the newspaper does it, I don't have to do this anymore. But I'd like to thank the organizer for having me participate in this fun time. Anyway, since it's Friday afternoon, I thought I could indulge in telling you a little story before the real talk. And it's a story I took from Le Petit Prince. And Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, when he was about 6 years old, starts drawing. And one day, he finally draws something, and he's very proud. And he shows it to the grown-ups. And he says, "Aren't you afraid of this? Aren't you afraid of this? Isn't that scary?" And the grown-ups look at him and say, "What are you talking about? Just a hat. It's just a..." "No, no, no," says little Antoine. "This is not a hat. Look carefully. What it really is a big snake that just ate an elephant." I'm not going to tell you the rest of the story because that would take too much time and some of it is a little depressing, I thought. In any case, the reason I'm bringing this story is because I would like to use this as an allegory or metaphor for maybe the following question. Is it absolutely clear that the origin of the fluctuation in the microwave background are coming from inflation? Is the source of these fluctuations from inflation? And, well, you heard. This is the grown-up speaking. So anyway, in the past 2 years, Tom Banks and myself have on and off thought about what we call holographic cosmology, which is basically building a cosmology based on the initial state that we think is robust. And by robust, we mean to use the E word, not the A word, which is robust by entropic, not anthropic, entropic considerations. And so the setup, just for simplicity, is we're going to be in four dimensions. We're going to be a decade after the Planck era, simply because we want to be able to describe the universe in a coarse-grained way by using geometrical means. And let's see, pointer here. And so imagine an observer, and he looks at his backward light cone. We've learned in the past few years that the amount of entropy in this backward light cone is bounded by this perimeter, by the area of this surface. And so the surface, the area of the surface, namely here it's a perimeter, provides for an upper bound. And so the most entropic configuration is the one that would saturate this bound, namely try to find an initial a configuration that saturates this. Now, what we've learned is that if you take equations of states, which relates the pressure and the energy density linearly, pressure equal to kappa rho, is there is a specific one, namely kappa equal to 1, for which the entropy scales like the area and is a constant of the motion. For any other equation of state, you can indeed saturate the entropy bound in one instant of time, but then inevitably in the future it goes down. So this is a rather stable statement in terms of saturating the entropy bound. Another property that this equation of state has is the following, is if you were to ask to construct star-like configuration, static, spherically symmetric, again, the entropy that you get for kappa equal to 1 is scales with the highest power of the radius of that sphere. For field theoretical degrees of freedom radiation, you only get a scaling for a given radius that is r to the power 3/2. Those results are rather robust. They're based just on symmetries of Einstein's equation in this static spherically symmetric context. To try to get a little bit more intuition and understanding of this equation of state, because it's a rather peculiar one, it's an extremely stiff equation. It's actually the stiffest equation of state consistent with causality. We can do some thermodynamics. And if we look at this thermodynamic relation locally, there is a relation between the local pressure, energy density, temperature, and entropy density, and also about the variation of the energy density as a function of the entropy density. And if you solve this equation for kappa equal to 1, what you find is that the entropy scales like the square root of the energy density. Now that, for string theories, should immediately tell them something. It's reminiscent of a conformal field theory in 1 plus 1 dimension. This is indeed the relationship between the entropy density and energy density for a relativistic gas in 1 plus 1 dimension. Now, often in the literature you will see that a homogeneous scalar is thought as representing a p equal to rho equation of state. It is indeed the way the energy density redshifts in Einstein's equation, but in terms of equilibrium statistical mechanics, it does not have the degrees of freedom that this equation of state has, because it can never reproduce such a relationship. So one has to be careful about talking about p equal to rho as a homogeneous scalar field. The next stage is, since we don't have, although we've been working and we are working in trying to construct a microscopic view of what this most entropic, most random initial state is, we've made some progress, but we're not there. If we had done it, I would have been talking about it. So we've built a heuristic intuitive picture of what such a fluid might look like or how it might behave. And so just to illustrate that, imagine a bunch of spheres of radius r which have black holes inside of them. The black regions are black holes, it's supposed to be black holes, whose radii are parametrically of the same order as r. And then it's easy to convince oneself that in all dimensions, actually, the entropy density, which is one, which is a number density times r. So how many black holes are there is one per volume, and this is how the entropy scales. So the entropy density is 1 over r, whereas the energy density, again, is 1 per volume. And as you know, the mass of a black hole in d dimension scales like the radius to the d minus 3 power, and hence you see this relationship comes out. And so as a heuristic mechanical picture, and I wouldn't, you know, push it further than one needs to, it is useful, as you will see, to keep this picture in mind, trying to picture what such a fluid looks like. Now, you might ask, well, this is a little peculiar, how do you generate pressure in such a fluid? If you think of it as black holes, and actually, it's basically information that produces the pressure. What happens, as you know, information requires space. Field theory is rather inefficient compared to black hole in storing information. This fluid is incredibly efficient, but nevertheless, it occupies a certain amount of space. Take two black holes next to each other, they will merge and make a bigger black hole. And so to speak, that's where the pressure comes from. In other words, gravity, metaphorically, in this regime is repulsive. It likes to push information out. You can't store more information than a certain amount within a finite region. So that's the origin of this pressure in this p equal to rho gas. So again, I repeat, what we were after, unlike the talk we heard earlier by André, was to consider the most random state, the most entropic state as an initial state, and see if we could build a cosmology out of this.
You're not expecting this to be a static state.
No. This state should evolve like a p equal to rho equation of state in a Friedman-Robinson-Walker geometry. And namely, it would have, actually, here is the geometry it has. And as any FRW geometry, it has a killing vector. When you rescale the time by lambda, in this particular case, p equal to rho, you can rescale x by a certain power of lambda. This is true in any FRW, for any equation p equal to kappa rho. But we believe this one is particularly special because, unlike the other equation of state, say radiation, where there is this conformal killing vector, it's not a symmetry. There are observables like the temperature, which can measure how the temperature goes down or up. Whereas in this black hole gas, dense gas of black hole, there is no observable that could tell you what is the what is the energy density. And so we believe that this equation of state P equal to rho, that this is actually not a conformal Killing vector, but just a conformal Killing symmetry. It's actually a symmetry of the system, unlike any of the other equation of state. And as you will see, pretty soon, that this is actually the basis of the results for the spectrum that we get of fluctuations. Now, the geometry I talked about, which is this dense gas of black hole, is rather robust. It's incredibly robust. It's the most entropic, so you know you don't descend in entropy, it violates the second law, so it's there. And in some ways, it's quiescent because there's no way to tell the time, because there's no observable, like a thermometer that you can put in there that could tell you what the temperature is. So if you want to have a universe where, which looks more like our universe and is not as boring as the P equal to rho, one could imagine carving out a sphere and putting this as an initial condition where you have, let's call this a normal region simply because the equation of state is more conventional, pressure equal to one-third rho, filled with radiation, say. And what I'd like to show is that this is actually not a reasonable configuration because you have to require continuity of the geometry. Obviously, in the transverse direction, there is a gradient pressure, and so you have to smooth out the jump in pressure from the inside and outside, but already from the point of view of the geometry along the surface, one can see that from the inside, the coordinate scale becomes smaller. In other words, imagine taking a sphere as seen from the outside that has a coordinate distance L, and ask, and so this is how the physical distance scales in P equal to rho, namely the scale factor is T to the one-third, so the area goes like T to the two-third, whereas in the interior, this is again a coordinate scale and square root of T squared, you notice that this coordinate scale shrinks. And so there is no place for such a region in this universe. And, oh, I'm glad I put this down because I almost forgot. In the early part of the talk, I talked about how the entropy was bounded by the area. That provided for an equal time slicing, which we will use, which is the equal area slicing. So I want you to keep this in mind. I will need this in the future. Now, to avoid this catastrophe that, you know, we can't have a normal region, and one way to avoid it is to make the boundary conditions so complicated that we don't really have a handle on it in a simple way, is to construct the most entropic initial state with a succession of like a Tinker Toy assembly of these normal regions. But you see, they touch each other all over the place. And so the Israel's junction conditions are rather complicated, and it's not clear at all that this region will not survive. It's rather clear that it will survive. This is a snapshot at time equal to 1, where the, and I should say it continues, I was just getting a little tired of drawing this stuff. The ratio of the volume occupied by the normal region, kappa equal to 1/3, to the P equal to rho region is epsilon. Epsilon is a fundamental parameter that you should be able to calculate from microscopics. We're not able to because we haven't quite deciphered or deciphered. We haven't even written the fundamental theory, but this is a fundamental parameter. How much of these, what is this volume of, with the condition that you maximize the entropy and that you survive, that you don't get into the situation of the single sphere which shrinks. So the region grows, and the growth of the ratio of the volume of radiation, the normal region, to the P equal to rho region grows like the square root of T. And so there's a point at which the volume is dominated by the normal regions. That time is, just so you can solve this little equation, is 1 over epsilon squared. And notice that the norm, there are regions which are p-equatorial regions that are trapped in the interstices in between the normal regions. Those, as the normal regions grow, will look like big black holes within these normal regions. And we will use as a fundamental parameter, rather than epsilon, the mass of the biggest black hole you get at the end of this transition. Okay, so that's a measure of this parameter epsilon. Now, so here is the initial picture. It grows and it continues to grow. But it's important to notice that the fluctuations in the fractal, by the fractal I mean this funny gas, and by fractal I don't want you to necessarily consider the technical term fractal. It's just tinker toy, da-da-da-da, is a bit too complicated. So it's just this fractal cannot have large fluctuations in its energy density, because if the fluctuation were large, they would form black hole and it would be recollapsing into the p equal to rho region. So just for survivability, there is a requirement that the fluctuations in this tinker toy construction be small. Now, since these fluctuations are small, I should remind you that at the beginning I told you with the first slide is that the homogeneous pressure equal to rho gas did saturate the entropy. And I should have added that I was also, there was a requirement there that was flat, that the FRW had k equal to 1, because if it was closed, things would have recollapsed within a short amount of time. Yeah. Yep.
So flat.
K equal to 0, thank you. Yeah. And the k equal to 1 case, the closed case, would have recollapsed, whereas the open cases, k equal to minus 1, the negative spatial curvature cases, you cannot pack as much entropy because the area, the volume grows like the area. And so we won't put as much entropy. And so this construction solves the horizon and flatness problem by maximizing the entropy. Yes.
Is it important?
And remember,
why do you have flat? Why do you say you have flat holes there other than some other people?
Some other people to roll stuff, yeah. Frankly speaking, if I can go back a second, I should. It is true that the equation of state. Yeah, you see this equation of state, which we obtained in the previous slide with statistical mechanics, this coefficient here depends on the microscopics. And so since we believe that this p equal to rho gas is really can be thought as a gas of black hole, this p equal to rho stuff is black hole-ish, and this coefficient should be the one that gives you the quarter of the area. But you're right, in principle, we don't know, since we don't have a fundamental theory of this. From simple.
How do you calculate what happens to these normal regions? You presumably don't actually solve equations for the metric near black hole.
No, we don't. That's right. But we are.
So. No. Together and live for such a short time.
No. No. There is. Let me phrase it this way. In terms of phase transition, there are two phases in which the black holes can be. Either a p equal to rho phase or a p equal to zero. So I will use the pressure as the order parameter. The control parameters are the ratio of the size of the black hole to the spacing between the black holes. That's one control parameter. The other one is delta rho over rho. So you have two control parameters, and you can have two phases. One when the black holes are dilute, that's p equal to zero. One when they're dense, it's p equal to rho. Now, I don't have a microscopic, so I that's the best I can answer. Okay, this is my first talk, so you have to. Oh, I'm not sure exactly how this works. With this thing. So I apologize. Maybe I should have some clowns in the meantime. Okay, there you go. So, If you remember the picture, there are these black holes. The fluctuations in the position and the size of the black holes are immediately related. Remember, the fluctuations, first of all, in the fractal, I said, had to be small so it not be reabsorbed in the black hole gas. Those are transferred in a linear way to fluctuations in the position of these big black holes and the sizes of these big black holes. Now, there's an assumption here that if the probability distribution of the fractal, the fluctuations in the fractal, satisfy this conformal symmetry, which we've talked about in the beginning, then a little bit of algebra can show you that the fluctuations in the energy density of the black hole is scale invariant, albeit scale invariant on a finite range, and I'll get back to this in a second. So far, we have the horizon and the flatness problem, scale invariant, but we still have to explain on how large a scale. Now, you have this picture of this big fractal that grows and grows, and now they're in large normal regions. Inside the normal regions, you should have all the low energy degrees of freedom propagate. This P equal to zero region, yes, I should say that these regions, since they're dominated by black holes, are no more radiation dominated. Black holes take a while to decay, they're massive, and so it's a non-relativistic gas. The size of the horizon, the physical size of the horizon, at the end of P equal to rho was M, and grows by this factor A to the 3/2, during the non-relativistic era. The energy density, since this one is 1 over m squared a cubed, that's just the volume reduction of non-relativistic gas, and this is just the density. The normal region, as I said, I repeat that, and in particular, in terms of low energy degrees of freedom, it has moduli. And those moduli could be described by a low energy effective Lagrangian of that form. And when this scale, namely the size of the horizon, is bigger than the Compton wavelengths of this of the scalar, it is possible to enter a period of slow roll inflation, because exactly at that point, this energy density is dominated by mu to the fourth. So you could enter a period of inflation which then is followed by some reheating to a temperature of order mu cubed. This is just square root of the decay rate of this modulus. To kind of give you a snapshot and a summary of the history of what has happened. So we start a little bit before the Planck's, a little bit after the Planck era, so that we have at least a coarse grain geometric view of the universe. We have this fractal, namely P equal to rho domination, and the scale, the ratio of the correlation scale to the present size of the horizon is then 10 to the minus 61 m. M is the size of the horizon at the end of the P equal to rho era. If this scale gets stretched during the period where the black hole dominate, the large black hole dominate, not the P equal to rho, but the P equal to zero regime. And then we enter a period of inflation which makes that scale grow to by a factor E times the number of E fold. I should at this point already tell you, we have obviously one parameter, which is the mass of the black hole, which was related directly to this factor epsilon. We have A, by how much the universe has grown during the non-relativistic era, that's the second parameter. A third parameter is the number of E-folding, and a fourth parameter is the value of mu in this potential. We enter inflation, we grow by an exponential factor, the scale factor has grown by that factor, then the inflaton oscillates, it has a lifetime. While it oscillates, we are again dominated by pressureless gas. And by the end of that period, we have simply a redshift by the usual factor that you get during a p equal to zero era. We have then reheating, the inflaton decays, and what you find following all these rescalings is that R correlation over R now today is this value. Okay, what happens tomorrow? Well, I don't think the future casts much of a shadow. I don't know.
It's only actually in a certain scale to which you stretch your...
That's correct. There's a finite range of scale that are being stretched now.
And you need also fine-tuning to put these scales in the galactic scale for the duration of the plane.
Let me show you how tuned these things are, okay? So this is obviously all encoded in these four parameters. Because that's all the parameters we have. All right? And remember, there are lots of normal regions. So, exactly, I mean, to get it to galactic scales, we're going to need m to the 2/3 to be 10 to the 6, because that's the range of scale that you get at the end of p equal to rho. If you only believe 3 decades rather than just down to galactic scale, then it's a factor of 4. That's the condition that inflation starts at the end of the black hole dominated era, the big black hole dominated era. And then, sort of what you just said, we have to require that the correlations be first of all on scales at least as big as the present horizon, scale invariance up at least to that scale, and then down to, and that depends on the various people you talk to, down to galactic scales or a little bit larger scales, okay, by a factor of 10 to the 3. So the model predicts a scale invariant spectrum on a finite range. There's no question that outside this range, it's not scale invariant. So that's one of the predictions of the model. Let me also kind of survey, I think I'll finish early, the values of the parameters. And in particular, there was this parameter A, which in this table we take to be 10, it could be 100. That's by how much the scale factor has grown during the non-relativistic period, which is dominated by the big black holes, which were the interstitial black holes. So there should be another table here with A equal to 100. I didn't put it down there. And so let's survey the various value of mu. I wrote here T reheating, it's obviously directly related to mu, it's mu cubed. This is the mass of the largest black hole, which is basically the lifetime of the p equal to rho state, and then the number of e-folding. 10 to the minus 22 over 3, which is about 10 to 12 GeV, is a requirement on mu, because you want to reheat to at least an MeV. Because if not, you don't have nuclear synthesis. So reheating has to be at least an MeV, which gives you this value for mu. I will give you extreme points of the parameters because it's complicated to show you all the whole range of values. For that value, you can use this equation. M is 10 to the 13. It's everything in Planck scale except when it's written explicitly. And we find that to get the requirement that Slava asked for, you need between 17 and 31 e-foldings, or 17 and 22 e-folding, depending on whether you want scale invariance down to the galactic scale or on larger scale than galactic, say 100 times bigger than the galactic scale. So notice this is obviously by input is a slow reheat temperature, but the hottest you can get it to reheat in our model, I hate the word scenario, in our model is 10 to the 5 or 1 TeV, depending on whether you want, again, scale invariance on galactic or larger scales. So one of the predictions of this model, besides that flatness horizon scale invariant spectrum on a finite range is that the reheat temperature is low, which requires low energy baryogenesis. In this regime, it's clear it's only the Affleck-Dein mechanism that can help you. In this regime, there may be places where actually the decay of the inflaton or weak interaction baryogenesis might be useful. Notice that the number of e-foldings is smaller than what is canonically thought of, like the 60 or 70 e-folding you need to solve the horizon. I should also add that the amplitude of the fluctuations produced by inflation in this scenario are too small. They do not come to an amplitude that's comparable to the ones that we have produced by the fractal. Now, I should be honest, since we do not have a microscopic description of the spi equal to rho gas, we do not know from first principle how large the ratio of delta rho over rho, what the aspect ratio is. But we are assuming that it's small by consistency, because if not, you revert down to the black hole. How small it is, we do not know from first principle. We assume that it's in the right range. if you look at how large mu is, and you square that, and you divide that, and you compare this to the Planck scale, you can see that the amplitude of the fluctuations produced during that short period of inflation are not big enough to produce those fluctuations. Another fine print, no, it's a big print, I should say, is that for small values of n, like 100 or 1,000, then I think we go back to the original picture of standard inflation. And even if the initial state might have been this most entropic one, it's forgotten. It will be washed away by inflation. So, but I just wanted to present this model to show you that indeed it is possible, and I'm sure Antoine de Saint-Exupéry would be happy, to maybe produce a spectrum of fluctuations at scale invariant, but on a short scale. It has consequences for low energy physics. And then one can play a game in terms of, you know, calling your bookie and seeing what is more probable and whether you should bet on this or should bet on that. Admiral Poindexter had some ideas like this in a more serious context. What is the relative probability for the initial conditions to have inflation compared to the p equal to rho state? The entropy of the initial condition that lead to the fractal scales like the area, whereas the one for inflation, which is described by field theoretical means, can only be like area to the 3/4, r to the 3/2. But remember, it's even worse than that, because you need specific initial condition in this context. And Andrea talked about that in just before lunch. So I think I'm 5 minutes early. So maybe to recap, here is a possibility to generate a spectrum of fluctuation that is scale invariant, has a prediction that it's not a scale invariant on all scale, but it's exactly scale invariant. It's this ns, n sub s is 1, not 0.97. If you measure 0.95, c'est fini. Ah, excellent question. I forgot to say, this is another fine print. The answer is we do not know. Okay, we do not know. I used the word fractal, and I was afraid this was being misleading. I used the word fractal just as a label, not as a mathematical statement. Okay, so to remind you of the little story in the beginning of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the little Antoine, there's a Belgian painter by the name of Magritte. He's a surrealist, and he thought of Newton. And that's what happened. This is it.
Any questions?
Andy.
So I know I've asked you this, you and Tom, this before, but I need re-education on this point. So on one hand, you say it's maximum entropy to start
consistent with.
On the other hand, there's an arrow of time.
Mm.
And so can you just say again what...
Again, when I said at the beginning it's maximum entropy, obviously the p equal to rho, the full p equal to rho is maximum entropy, and then there's no question of arrow of time, because there's no arrow of time there. But when you go to this fractal situation, this is not anymore maximum entropy. It's maximum entropy conditional to survivability.
So let me just understand, yes. The p equals rho, though, am I supposed to think of it as a bunch of black holes that are coalescing and...
That has
an arrow of time.
That's right. But, you know, again...
So forget about the real universe popping out, just the starting point. That already seems different.
Yeah, but you see, if it's happening everywhere and it's continuous, you're going to have to come up with an observable that tells you, or a clock, or thermometer that tells you that you indeed grow. You see, you saw these black holes separate from each other. In this fluid, they're not separate from each other. This was just a heuristic picture. So in this exact, we're talking about the exact P equal to rho fluid?
Yeah. So you're saying there really isn't time?
Not in that fluid. No, I don't think there's an observable you can invent that would be able to. Well, look, the truth of the matter, we don't have microscopic description, so I don't really know for sure, right? But
I think in the formalism that we're trying to put together to microscopically describe this, there is actually an arrow of time built in. There's actually an arrow of time built into the formalism, but. What I think Willie is trying to say is we don't know how to describe observables of this system that would measure that arrow of time. So we're not exactly the formalism. Right. So
somehow there's something in there.
Yeah. I mean, our problem with this is that although we think we have some idea of what a mathematical model of it might be, we don't really have a good idea of what to call the observables of that model.
Thank you. You asked my own question, but I'll be good.
Okay,
I'll hear next.
I'll just ask you one question.
So we had two very clever people today give us justifications for their models of the early universe, which were entropic. Andre told us that his was plausible because the entropy was 1, and you're telling us that yours is plausible because the entropy is very large, which I think teaches us that we don't understand the principle that should be applied in this context. There's no real generalized second law that works. But I want to ask what's perhaps a better defined question in the specific argument that you gave. You said that you could maximize entropy with a flat universe, and that explained the flatness problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very counterintuitive to me, because when you have gravity, usually entropy gets maximized by a very inhomogeneous formation of black holes.
Mm-hmm.
What are you keeping fixed, and what are you allowing to vary as you find that the entropy is maximal for the flat configuration?
First of all, as I said, the entropy that scaled like the air, entropy per area, which was a constant, that was saturated by homogeneous P equal to rho, homogeneous, K equal to 0. I don't mean the other K. Absolutely homogeneous. And it saturates. I can't do better. So that is... And if you tried to take K equal to 1 or K equal to minus 1, you won't saturate that bond, even homogeneously. It's not separate black holes. It's not separate black holes. I think there is a misleading aspect to this picture where, this mechanical picture where we draw these black holes which are commensurate in size within the region they're in. Actually, it's a black hole everywhere. And so I don't really know how, it's not one single black hole which is very symmetric. It's P equal to rho. I don't know if I should divulge your crazy ideas about the microscopics, but I think I probably will pass on that.
Any other questions?
With me.
You said that there are no observables that can tell the arrow of time. That's not what you said during the talk. What you said during is there's no observables which will tell you what time it is. But it's different to ask what time it is than which way time is flowing. Are you sure there's no observables that tell you what
during
time?
During the exact P equal to rho state? I don't think so. But you know, again, I repeat, we don't have really a microscopic view of this. So, you're going to have to put something in there to measure. Like, you're going to need a thermometer. Yeah. You can clearly not use radiation in there.
Yeah.
So the question is, what thermometer are we going to use? What kind of oscillator are we going to put? There is no oscillator. Actually, I don't think this fluid even. Wait a second. This fluid does not support localized excitation. There is no field theory in this context. And actually, I didn't derive. I have a little transparency where there is a little bit of the algebra how we got the scale invariance. We do not use quantum field theoretical methods to get this scale invariance because they're not applicable in the P equal to rho fluid. It's only based on symmetry. But so
as far as I could tell,
yes.
What you're talking about is a state which is stationary, not static.
That may be probably more accurate.
There is a difference.
Okay, but yes.
And in one, you can't tell what time it is, but you can tell which way time is flowing.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably.
I think we can't say it certainly looks that way. We've been able to figure out what time falling.
So I'm sorry, I should be good as an organizer. So to repeat what I said, I think we agree with you. We definitely think that formalism has an arrow of time in it, but we haven't been able to figure out what the measure, you know, the observable is that measures.
More questions?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You have regions of normal matter surrounded by black holes that begins to grow. This horizon that is outside this region is very similar to what is the difference with the Sitter models, the Sitter universe in these small regions that are surrounded by horizons also.
I'm not exactly sure which difference you're interested in. You want to compare this situation to which one? Because I'm not sure I got...
These regions which is surrounded by horizons that grows differently,
it's equal
1/3.
Oh, the radiation region?
They
yes.
They have a horizon surrounding this region.
Yes, and they grow.
It's similar to the Sitter. Which is the difference of the region with the Sitter with matter or radiation?
Tom does like this, so I'm going to let Tom say why he does like this, because I don't think it's quite exactly like the Sitter case.
Okay, this Lily doesn't want to talk about this because it's rampant speculation, okay, and he likes to he likes to be conservative, but we did notice when we were applying this Israel junction condition that if your region inside, remember when Willie showed you the Israel junction condition with a radiation fluid inside, that the radiation fluid shrank. If you take the Sitter space, if you use static coordinates for the inside, then it's possible to satisfy the Israel junction condition in such a way that the inside doesn't shrink and stays at a fixed radius from its own point of view, and that's consistent with the size of the sphere on the outside. And so speculatively one might imagine that you have this fractal covering just a finite part of this black coordinate grid, and that will end up being a de Sitter space of a certain size with a certain finite radius. But we really have very little reason to make that claim at this point.
Other questions? So we have time, so I will ask a question, and then I will propose an answer, and you can tell me what you think. The question is, if you start with your P equals rho black hole fluid, and you take two things very, very close, two configurations, you sort of coarse grain and pick two examples, mm-hmm. and you let them flow forward, mm-hmm. you get more or less the same universe at the end of the day, one you're going to say which looks more or less like our universe.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you coarse grain our universe, and mm-hmm. time reverse and let it flow backwards, most of the time you're not going to get a homogeneous P equals rho fluid. And so the question is, doesn't that mean that your configuration is actually very low entropy? Right. So my suggested answer is that in fact it is low entropy, it's high entropy density, and when coupled to gravity, there's no reason why a high entropy state should be high entropy density.
Okay, let me answer the question by considering a crunch. Okay, because you're going backward in time, so let me consider the crunch. As the universe crunches, as you perfectly know, and the distance between particles is such, it gets smaller and smaller, but things blue shift, and the energy increases, and obviously these distances between particles are going to be smaller than the Schwarzschild radius associated with center of mass energy of pairs of particles. So as you go back, say from a radiation era, back in a back, forward to the crunch, you're going to start forming black holes, and indeed fluctuations grow, which make even more black holes. And we believe that the end point of a crunch is actually a P equal to rho, with one difference, is that the correlations in the crunch, in the state P equal to rho at a very large scale, there are correlations, whereas in our construction, there are only correlations at very short distance scales. and I haven't talked about the way we construct from the Big Bang a succession of history, but so I believe, no, that as you go back, P equal to rho is going to dominate, and actually it is an attractor.
Well, I can't stop you from thinking that. Any other questions?
I'm sure you can.
No, all right, let's thank Lee again.